is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. With more dedicated on-street bike lanes, an ever-expanding system of riding trails, a popular bike share system, and several active cycling clubs, Greater Cincinnati is far more bike-friendly than it was just a decade ago. But is Cincinnati doing enough to promote biking and making cyclists safe on city streets? May is National Bike Month. Joining us today to discuss biking in our region is social designer and holistic community development specialist and organizer of Red Bike and Green Social Club here in Cincinnati, Jasmine Humphreys, Ohio bike lawyer Steve Magus, and Red Bike Executive Director Jason Barron, and Wade Johnson, the Director of Tri-State Trails, a green umbrella initiative to expand access to walkable and bikeable communities. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
And how many people biked here?
I did.
Okay.
Half.
Three?
Half.
Okay, half. All right, half of 50%. That.
50%.
So, Jason, where do we stand on the Red Bike project and initiative? You're about 3 years old now.
Red Bike's going great. So, we're about 3.5 years old. We started in September of 2014. We've had over 325,000 rides in that short amount of time. Like everybody in Cincinnati, but maybe even more so, running a bike share system, we're really excited that infinite winter has finally stopped and the birds are chirping and the sun is shining and people are out riding bikes again. So we've seen great ridership through the weekends the last couple weeks, and it's been really wonderful.
So how many bikes do you have out on the streets?
So Red Bike's grown to a system of 57 stations and 440 bikes. We're all the way from northern Kentucky and Bellevue and Covington and Newport all the way up through downtown and over the Rhine, the campus area up by the hospitals and the university, all the way up to Northside.
Do you see more expansion or do you?
Absolutely. So we're always looking to raise funds and find new communities and new spaces. In downtown, we could almost literally put one on every single corner, and that's becoming more and more true and over the Rhine as well. But we're also starting to look at communities that are close enough by that biking to them makes sense. So we've looked at like Lower Price Hill or Avondale, Walnut Hills, East Walnut Hills. Mount Auburn's a pretty hilly area, but once you're up on top of Mount Auburn, it's kind of flat as you get over to campus. So we're looking at that area. I'm sure I'm missing many others, but we're really interested in trying to find new places to put bikes and to connect people so that they can get around town that much easier.
Jasmine Humphreys, tell me a little bit about Red Bike and Green. What is it? What are you trying to accomplish?
Okay, so Red Bike and Green is actually not new. I just decided to bring it to Cincinnati.
It's new here, though,
it's,
right?
It's new to Cincinnati, but it is a national organization that started in Oakland in 2008, and the main chapter is in Atlanta right now. But basically, it's a bike organization that focuses on creating a relevant bike culture for Black people. So Red Bike and Green is, analogous to the red, black, and green colors of the Black national flag, right? So it's focused on three pillars. It's biking is economical. So bikes don't cost much. Bike repairs don't cost much. Focusing on health benefits as well as environmental benefits. But I'd say that Red Bike and Green just gets people together on bikes and just kind of kick it. And hopefully we use it as a way to get people more involved in other parts of the bike community and other bike organizations.
So how long have you had a chapter here in Cincinnati?
So we had our first unofficial ride back in October, but I'd say we've really been planning since this past January. So on this Saturday, it's going to be our first really big ride.
This Saturday?
Yes, this Saturday.
Very timely here.
Yes, it is.
And so where are you going to start?
So we're going to start at Findlay Market, and the event is called 100 Blacks on Bikes. So thanks to Red Bike for making this possible. So we have several hundreds of registrations right now, but we're starting at Findlay Market. It's only going to be about a 4.5-mile ride with a very intentional stop in front of the Freedom Center for, talking and photo ops, and then ending at Ziegler Park for a kickback.
Very, very good stopping at the Freedom Center. I don't know if you know, I just finished a year as president of the Freedom Center, so I totally approve of that.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Wade Johnson, Tri-State Trails. Your goal is to create and expand walkable and bikeable communities. What's that mean? In this case, bikeable communities.
So we're trying to create an environment that is welcoming for bicyclists and pedestrians to get around. We've identified multi-use trails, what many people would call a bike path, as the key opportunity to hit a number of different trail users. We're trying to connect trails so that people can get from point A to point B safely and feel like there is a designated place for them in the roadway to get around.
So what's the status right now of the Wasson Way Trail, the Licking River Trail? Those are the two that I see the most about. I'm sure there's others out there, but where do we stand on those two?
Yeah, so we have a 10-county footprint in Southwest Ohio, Northern Kentucky, Southeast Indiana, and in that footprint, we've got about 335 miles of trail that exists.
That already exists.
That already exist. And our big focus is to connect those trails. Wasson Way is an important connection in east-west that could link the residential neighborhoods on the east side to Uptown, the second largest employment hub. It's a part of a network that we have been working on called The Crown, the Cincinnati Riding or Walking Network. And that's a vision for a 30-mile loop around the city of Cincinnati with 74 miles of other neighborhood connections so that from wherever you are in Cincinnati, you can be within a mile of a bike trail or a bike path and be able to get where you need to go in the city.
Okay. What about the Licking River Trail?
Licking River Greenway is an important north-south connection in Northern Kentucky, and we hope we'll soon connect to the Riverfront Commons Trail, which is the Ohio River Trail on the south side of the river, led by South Bank Partners. Just this past year, Licking River Greenway started moving forward with construction funding to extend the trail another mile or so south on top of the levee wall in Covington. So we'll have an important piece of that built this year.
Okay. So things are moving.
Oh,
yeah. Takes time.
Oh, yes. Very incremental. It's a long-term approach. Trails are pretty expensive because you have to assemble a corridor. But they are the most welcoming infrastructure facility that we can build to get all kinds of users.
Steve Magus, you're a bike lawyer. I don't know what the heck that is. What's a bike lawyer?
I started doing bicycle-related legal stuff back in the 80s. Also started working with the Cincinnati Cycle Club. I started writing articles for local clubs and then a group called Bike Ohio that had a newspaper that was in all the bike shops in the 80s. I started writing for Bike USA, which is the League of American Wheelmen, now the League of American Bicyclists organization. Picked up some cases along the way as a personal injury representing cyclists. And now today I sit on the board of the Ohio Bike Federation, Bicycle Federation. So as a statewide advocacy group, and then I work on bicycle cases. So 9 to 5, I handle cases where bicyclists are injured or killed, and from 5 to 9, I kind of do bicycle advocacy work with a bunch of different groups.
And does that leave you time to actually ride?
Occasionally. Occasionally. I picked up a nice folding bike that I can toss in the trunk and take with me anywhere now, so get to take it out. So, and I've got cases from here to Cleveland, Belle Fountain, Marietta, Columbus, Youngstown, so we're always on the road somewhere.
So you're representing cyclists who have been hit,
yes,
been pushed off the road, or maybe been killed. What would you say about safety for cyclists in Ohio, both from a legal point of view and also from a cultural point of view? Because I think this is about more than just what's the law.
Right. Ohio, and so a couple other things that I enjoy doing. I study sort of the history of cycling and also the numbers because I was a math major. I got a math degree back in the day. So statistically, in Ohio, it's very safe, very, very safe to ride a bike. Ohio, when you compare how Ohio fares against other bigger states, we're way below in terms of crash rates and fatality rates and things like that where you're measuring things against the population size.
Why do you think that is, though?
We have bigger cities that don't have as many big city problems. We have lots of smaller communities. We have a lot of great riding just, you know, in the cities, but also we have a whole network of nice roads in the country that make for great riding. There's a lot of riding, and the history here. Back in 1880 is when the Cincinnati Cycle Club started, when the League of American Wheelmen started. Orville and Wilbur kind of got their start as bicycle mechanics here. Lots of bicycle manufacturing occurs in Ohio, or did. So there's a long history of Ohioans using the roads to ride bikes. I have a book I was going to bring. It's printed in 1892, I think, and it has every county in the state with a map. And then there's a paragraph about where the good places to ride a bike are, what you should see, what restaurants you should visit. Here's where you can spend the night. Back in 1892, people were carrying these books around and riding all over the state. So there's a long history of riding here.
So would you say that Ohio law is as sophisticated in the area of bike safety as the rest of the nation? Are we in good shape there?
We are in pretty good shape there. We, in 2006, the Ohio Bicycling Federation developed what was called the Better Bicycling Bill. And we wrote it. We found sponsors for it, kind of shoved it through the legislature on the very last legislative day. At about 9 o'clock at night, it passed the Ohio House, and it was voted unanimously. The next day, Governor Taft signed it. That changed many laws. I've got a 30-page essay that I wrote on all the legal changes that really helped turn Ohio law to be much more bike-friendly. Since then, it's been a little tougher to get things passed, but we did get the three-foot law passed, so that kind of brings us up to speed with the majority of the states there.
The three-foot law.
Three-foot law says prior to March of 2017, when a vehicle passed another vehicle, the standard of care was you just had to make it pass safely. And if a car zoomed by my elbow and I complained to a police officer, the officer would say to me, "Did he hit you?" "No." "Okay, it was a safe pass." We didn't think that was appropriate, and as many states haven't. There's three-foot laws in a majority of the states. And so basically a car has to give you at least 3 feet when passing. If I can reach out and smack your mirror as you're going by, you're too close to me. Okay. So the idea is to this not necessarily have a yardstick out and measure, but to create this idea in the driving public that these people need some space for safety. And that's what we're looking for.
Jason, while during that first segment, we did have a caller who just wanted to pass on a question, and that is, what's it cost to ride a red bike downtown? And I do know there's a special going on right now.
Correct. So there's two ways to use Red Bike. One is as a member, and we have two membership levels. We have an annual membership that's $80 for an entire year of biking. That's 22 cents a day to have access to 440 bikes on demand. You really can't beat it. We also recently introduced a $15 monthly membership. And then we also have the $8 day pass, and that allows you to bike as many times as you want to for a 24-hour period. And then as you alluded to, what we've recently launched is Red Bike Go. Red Bike Go, generously funded by a grant from Interact for Health, is our effort to connect to low-income riders and make sure low-income riders have access to Red Bike. This is something that bike share systems around the country have dealt with, which is that bike share, for whatever reason, tends to be more male, tends to be more middle class or upper class, and tends to be younger folks. We're actually unique in that we're actually split 50-50 male to female, which is unique to a lot of bike share systems. But like a lot of folks, you know, we've had to have, you know, continuous efforts to try to make sure that low-income individuals understand Red Bike and see it as a useful part of their lives.
Okay.
We did a couple focus groups. Fascinatingly, everybody we talked to in the focus groups knew there was an $8 day pass, but none of them knew about the $80 annual pass. And when we asked them in these focus groups, would you be interested in a $5 monthly pass? Universally, everybody's like, well, they'd never do that. If it's $8 a day, they'd never do $5 a month. So that shows the communications problem we have. And what we have to do is reach out to folks and say, look, we've designed this program for low-income individuals that are either on food stamps or receive some sort of energy assistance, or are clients of our partner organizations. And we're partnering with social service agencies throughout the community to connect their clients to Red Bike.
Well, it sounds to me like that's also part of what your approach to collaboration with community groups that Jasmine was mentioning, mm-hmm. that the ride with the Red and Green Bike Cycle Club this week, mm-hmm. Red Bike is helping make that happen and spreading the news and the information about Red Bike. Is that right?
Yeah, because like much of our ridership are fairly new riders. So it's like, you know, we can have this event and encourage people to, you know, purchase bikes and adopt bikes, but really just like get people on bikes first. So it couldn't be made this possible, right? Like this amount of people without the help of Red Bike.
Yep. So we're going to have 100 bikes on Saturday ready to go to help out. So then folks will obviously bring their own bikes, but we'll have 100 Red Bikes in reserve mm-hmm. that folks have registered and reserved. We'll be able to use on this ride, which is really exciting.
Steve?
You mentioned safety a few minutes ago. One thing that's remarkable about Red Bike and most of the bike share programs is that they have an amazing safety record. There's only been, I think, out of, I don't know, 50 million riders in New York City, I think there's been one fatality ever on the city bikes there. I don't, you know.
If everyone listening could knock on wood right now, that would be great. Well, that's not an accident, Steve. So we have a team of folks that are out every day from about 7 in the morning to about 9 at night performing safety checks on the bikes, going from station to station to make sure there are enough bikes at all the stations, and answering customer service calls and sometimes showing up on site to help our riders with issues they have. It's really important for us to make sure that every single time somebody touches a Red Bike, they have a quality, safe ride.
And I want to say that that's really important. I ride a lot on my own bike, but the worst bike accident I ever had was on a Red Bike. And the yellow signs with somebody getting their front tire caught in a streetcar track, mm-hmm. I modeled for that. And it was scary. What happened.
Absolutely.
Thank goodness I had a helmet on, and I really encourage people to use helmets. But you have to cut the streetcar tracks at an angle.
That's right.
You just can't slide over. And I'm an experienced rider, but it just didn't cross my mind. It was just the streetcars weren't running yet. It's just the tracks were there. And I just didn't think about it. And it can really, really be a tough thing. We have a caller who's calling in who I think has a safety-related question that it would be good to pick up right now. Mike, do you have a question?
Yeah. My name's Mike. And I was just wondering, guys, if I know the incidence of pedestrians getting hit with cars has gone up significantly over the last few years in the United States. I was just wondering, I'm assuming it's cell phone usage, whether it's texting or talking to drivers on their cell phones. It's just taking their attention away from the act of driving, but I just wondered if you've seen the incidence of bikes get hit by cars, if you've seen an increase in that over the last few years.
That we, when you track those things, they tend to track along with certain other things like economic status. So in 2008, when gas was $4 a gallon, people were riding bikes a lot more, and there was an uptick in crashes and also in hit and runs. That could be because there's more people driving without insurance. They hit something and then they don't want to be questioned by the police. People that have outstanding warrants don't want to be questioned by police. People who are drinking don't want to be questioned by police. So there's a lot of things that lead to hit and run crashes. But AAA just came out with a report. It's still a very significant epidemic issue that goes even beyond the distraction level. I think people that are distracted tend to stop, and there's more of a kind of an evil motive that's in the mind of someone who knows they've hit a person on a bike or and who's walking and then just leaves the scene.
Yeah. Well, in addition to that, there's a perception of safety too. There's real safety and there's perceived safety. And, you know, I think that illustrates the need for more infrastructure, and that's why we do the work that we do with Tri-State Trails. People want to have a safe experience when they're on a bike. And in order for people to feel safe, around the country, the infrastructure that people feel most safe on is trails or protected bike lanes where there is some type of physical separation. Right. So, you know, it's something that we are doing and we need to continue to do mm-hmm. if we want to continue to keep Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky a safe and welcoming place for bike riders.
But that raises the question of the bike lanes that have been painted on city streets and, you know, the functionality of those lanes, particularly controversial and I think has slowed the whole process down, was the lanes that were put on to Central, on both sides of Central Parkway, the bike lanes. And Wade, how do you see those kinds of bike lanes at this point?
Well, when Central Parkway was implemented, Cincinnati definitely had a period of bike lash, where where we are adjusting to change, and
Don't do that easily.
That's right, and it takes some time. And you know, I think we're at a point now where we can call Central Parkway a successful project that needs to be completed, because it has that separated facility that people are looking for. It's a flat corridor. That's another big opportunity for Cincinnati, is where we can find flat areas. Mm-hmm. And the benefit to protected bike lanes is, as compared to trails, is it's expensive to assemble a corridor to build a trail. If you can utilize the space that we already have in the roadway and put a protected facility in, you're saving a lot of money on acquiring land. Cities all over the country are doing this. It's something that bike lanes in general, trails in general, we need to embrace if we want to remain competitive as a region for attracting businesses like Amazon. If you think about the Amazon headquarters too, that they were looking at, bike lane or bike facilities and transit were a huge part of the locations that they chose. Indianapolis, Columbus are on that short list. They have been investing in trails and transit and biking infrastructure. And if we want to keep up, we have to.
There's a hierarchy of sort of bike infrastructure. You kind of start with the Sharrow, where you just kind of slap a picture of a bike into a lane, and it kind of is supposed to send a visual cue to the motorist. Hey, you know what? There may be a bicyclist around here. I don't know. Then you kind of go to the green paint. You go to the protected lane. In Columbus, they have a one-way street that has parking and then a two-way protected bike lane next to that.
Oh,
two-way. Oh, yeah, yeah. And that's an experiment that they're doing with the federal approval, but it's a challenge, to say the least. The issue with infrastructure is you have to do it intelligently. You have to do it in places where the thing that you're building makes sense with everything else that's going on. If you have too many pinch points, crisscrosses, if you build a bike lane in a door zone where you got cars lined up and people are going to be opening car doors into the bike lane all day long, that's going to be a big problem. There was just a fatal crash. I can't remember which city it was in. I think it was in Indianapolis, where a car door opened, hit somebody, sent them into the car lane, so to speak, and they were hit by a car and killed. So those kind of issues we really keep track of.
You know, if you've been to Europe and places like Copenhagen, for example, where everybody rides a bike, and they have their own separate system with their own traffic lights and bike traffic lights. And, you know, it is possible to do it. And those cities are a lot older than we are, but they've made it work because they've made the commitment and people want to do it. Jasmine, as you talk to people, especially in the African American community, mm-hmm. is the safety question, riding in the street, something that they worry about and just, you know, don't feel comfortable getting started, yet find the bike trails in many cases too far out?
No. So, I mean, the Black cycling community is very diverse. So there's actually a organization called Black Girls Ride Bikes, as well as Major Taylor Cycling Club that do ride on those trails. But for more urban, in the sense of really urban communities, I find that a lot of people do ride on the streets and everything. And, you know, really empowering people to know that they are entitled to a lane is very important.
Okay. And I see a question coming in from somebody by the name of Chris. Yeah, Chris. Chris, if we can get you on the air here, I think you have a question about bike education. You want to ask your question, please?
Yeah, my question was just about educating bikers as to which roads are conducive for biking. I'm in, I guess, rural Cincinnati, and there are a lot of roads where everybody can be doing everything right, and it still puts the biker at risk for an accident because it's a 45 or a 55 mile an hour zone. It may be a nice, hilly, curvy area that's beautiful, but the biker probably shouldn't be there.
Well, that's one nice thing about Ohio is that you are allowed to ride bikes on just about every road in Ohio. And if you can't drive a car at the legal speed and avoid hitting things, then that's a problem for the car driver, not the cyclist. So we try to encourage cyclists to take a lot of strategic tactics when they're on road. So you don't hug the white line, you don't become a gutter bunny and just ride to the right. You move into the lane a little bit. That may tick off a motorist behind you, but it also allows them to see you much earlier in the game.
You claim your space.
That's mm-hmm. right. You're claiming your space, but they know you're in that space. And if you ride off to the right, that sends a visual cue to that motorist. Hey, I can get next to her elbow and not cross the lane line. And, you know, I could just squeeze right in there. Where if you scoot over a little bit, everybody knows you're in that lane. The motorist has to go around you. We see a lot less a lot fewer problems for cyclists when they take that lane space.
Well, I do want to say that during this month of May, National Bike Month, there are a lot of programs that are going on throughout the month. Everything from, Steve, you were mentioning the history of cycling, a nice little photo exhibit at the public library, to education about safety, to bike rides that different groups not just red and green, but other groups are putting together. There's a lot of different things that are going on this month, and you can find all of that on the web.
CincyBikeMonth.com.
CincyBikeMonth.com. Okay, CincyBikeMonth.com. So anyway, a lot more to this discussion. The point is, the reason we got so many calls is people want to ride. And that's the really good news. So thank you very much. Good luck on Saturday. Let's hope that it doesn't rain. And
it won't.
It won't rain. It never rains on your bike. Right. Okay, I've heard that. I want to thank all our guests as they head out on their bikes back to their various roles in life.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.